Good day, and welcome to the Central Asia Metals Interim Half-Year Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Nick Clarke, the Chief Executive of Central Asia Metals. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. And to those in the room, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this, our, I think, third interim results presentation. We had a brief one in 2012 last year, and now this year. And to those on the phone, also, I welcome. And I assume that everybody now has a presentation in front of them. So I'll just quickly run through the headline numbers. We've had a very good year, half year. We produced over 5,000 tonnes of copper. That's nearly 5% up on the same period last year. We sold nearly 5,000 tonnes. We have, at the end of the six-month period, we had over 400 tonnes in stock still on site, which was just a timing issue. During the period, we've concluded the acquisition of 40% of Kunran, so that now the CAML Group is the 100% owner of the Kunran project. So therefore, we can book 100% of the revenue. This first half year is just under $34 million of revenue. And I think from that, we've generated an EBITDA of nearly $22 million. So that's an EBITDA margin of 65%. And that's very much in line with our previous year's production financial performance. So we're maintaining that margin. We're maintaining those low costs. And obviously the C1 cash cost at 72 cents a pound, again, is lower than it this time last year, driven partly by a tenge devaluation that occurred in the first quarter of this year, but also by management focusing very much on keeping its operating costs down. Now, with me today, obviously, I have Howard, our technical director, who will take you through some of the operational issues, Nigel Robinson, the CFO, who will run you through the finances, and there are some issues in there which I think he wants to take you through so you can fully understand some of the fair value uplift occurrences due to the acquisition of the 40%. But also we have a general director from Kazakhstan, Sarkin Ashibekova. You want to stand up? Sarkin runs the Kunran Copper Company, and some of you who have actually been to site will know that we have a plant out there that operates and produces the copper cathodes. And Sarkin has been with us since day one through the construction period and operating the plant. And so we're very pleased to welcome her here during this period. So she's been the driving force of the management team out there. And, you know, Sarkin is a Kazakh citizen, trained in Moscow, PhD in metallurgy, probably the highest qualified person in the company. And she drives and manages all our operations out there that generate these numbers. So I'm very pleased and proud to welcome her here today. Now, having said that, our cash position at the end of June was $29 million. Some of you, the analysts, will have assessed our numbers of having been slightly bigger. You will note that there were some receivables of $12.7 million that actually came in July. But as of just the other day, we have, and we're back up to $42 million in the bank. So all of this conspires to allow us to announce a 5p interim dividend. That is 25% higher than this comparable period last year. It represents about $8.7 million that we're paying back to shareholders. And interestingly, that takes the total amount we've paid back to shareholders now since IPO, which is not yet 4 years away, 4 years past. It takes over $40 million that we returned to shareholders. Something of the order of 68% of the money we raised at IPO, we've now returned to shareholders. And also, please bear in mind that on our balance sheet, we have no debt. So we have $42 million in the bank. We've paid back over $40 million in the since operation started. And we have currently a market capitalization of over $300 million. I think I'm very proud to lead this team. We've delivered, I think, it's a small project, but it makes money and it's returning to shareholders. And the testament to the project is that since we started operations, only in April of 2012, we produced over 22,000 tons of copper. Actually, as I sit here now, we're sitting at about over 25,000 tons, but those results for this last quarter, the Q3, will be announced in a few weeks' time. So with that, I'll hand over to Nigel.
Morning, everybody. I think Nick's covered some of the most salient points from the financial results there, but what I will do, I'll just add a little bit of flesh onto that and go through some of the numbers. The first slide here really summarises what's the statutory income statement for the first 6 months of the year. And as you can see, our gross revenue for the period, which is now 100% accounted for, was $33.7 million, giving an operating profit of $19.4 million, which is an operating percentage of 57.5%. I just make the point there that it's difficult to compare the numbers period with period, because in the first half of 2013 we only actually accounted for 60% of the Kuna project. But as you know now, and I'll come on to touch on it a bit more during the presentation, we now own 100% of that particular project. So it is continued strong profitability throughout the company. You will notice there, it'd be difficult not to notice them, some one-off impacts in both periods actually. Previous year we wrote off all our assets in Mongolia for reasons which we've explained why. And this year we had a one-off gain on the acquisition caused by moving to 100% ownership of the project of $33 million. And I'll come on to explain how that number was generated further on in the presentation. Key number to take away from this slide though is profit after tax of $47 million compared to a prior 6 months period in 2013 of a loss of $5.1 million, so a big turnaround there. But there are some big one-off impacts that affect it. Just move on there, Howard, to the next slide. Probably more important from an analyst point of view is how is the project overall performing. Well, I've mentioned the revenue already, but that's driven from sales of nearly 4,700 tonnes. It is only a timing difference, the fact that there's a drop in sales there. We sell copper every month to Traxys, and it's delivered every month. Last year at June 2013 we had about 25 tonnes on site at the end of the period. This year we had about 430 tonnes, I think it was. So obviously that's just the timing. That tonnage of copper has since been dispatched to our end consumers in Turkey. The unit price which we achieved over the period is actually a slight increase on the previous period of $7,049 per tonne. That's pretty good actually. There's a lot of prophecies of doom about the copper price this year, and so far we've found in the first half it stayed reasonably bullish in many ways, and $7,000 per tonne is a number which we're pleased to announce. On the cost side of it, again, Nick's already mentioned that we were assisted. We can't stand here and say all the reduction in costs or the maintenance of costs was all due to management control, but I think we do keep strong management control on site on the cost base, but we have been helped by the devaluation, and I would argue probably that the devaluation of that 10.7% reduction in the C1 cash cost you see there in absolute numbers is probably half of that, I would argue. Our cost base in tenge is about 60% of the cost we incur on site, about 60% tenge base. And clearly, even though there's a 20% devaluation, there has been an inflationary pressure in the country. And I think Sarkin will back me up on this, whereby there's been pay rises and retail pricing increases and generally inflationary pressures to increase the cost base there. But overall, that's a pleasing result in terms of the costs. And Nick's already mentioned, and I'll touch on it in a minute, how that's affected our unit costs. The EBITDA margin still maintaining 65%, and a group EBITDA there of $21.8 million. The one thing which is noticeable now, and it's again a consequence of acquiring 100% of the project, is the increase in depreciation and amortisation that we're getting coming through. Obviously, the balance sheet has been inflated, and obviously we have to recognise a higher charge for depreciation and amortisation, albeit non-cash, but we have to recognise that through the books, and that will be an ongoing thing as we go through the rest of the project. I won't labour this point. We are extremely low cost. We're certainly in the lowest quartile. 72 cents per pound is the takeaway number on that. It was 76 cents per pound in the previous period for H1 2013, and it was 73 cents per pound we announced for the full year 2013. So a slight reduction in our C1 cash costs against the background of an increased fully absorbed cost, of which of that 162 cents per pound you can see for the whole pie chart, apologies for that category name there, but those basically are, in terms of going around the pie chart there, you can see cost of production for the copper, the next one is mineral extraction tax, the next one is sales and distribution. The big portion of the pie now is depreciation and amortisation charge, 48 cents per pound of that 162, of which $0.29 per pound is contributed by the fair value uplift, the increase in depreciation and amortisation charges we're incurring. Slight one here is G&A, general and admin costs throughout London and Balkash. And the final one, I'm trying to think what the final one is now. Yeah. So, just move on, Howard, on to the next slide. What I've tried to do here is, because we've been in production over 2 years now, 26 months, you show the trend, you show that it's a stable operation both financially and operationally. As Nick mentioned, we've produced over 22,000 tonnes of copper as at the end of June, and getting close to 25,000 tonnes now at the end of September. And in those periods, you can see that generally the costs have stayed pretty stable, really. Starting back in 2012, we had 8 months of production because we started the plant on the 30th of April 2012. 8 months of production, our C1 cash cost then was 71 cents per pound. 2013, a slight increase to 74 cents per pound. And now the latest period we're reporting, 72 cents per pound. That works out an average over that 26-month period, about 72 cents per pound. And an all-inclusive cost averaged over the period of about $1.50, almost $1.49, as you can see there. But what you can see there is the marked increase in depreciation and amortisation in H1 2014. 2.1 is the ongoing of the book values. 2.9 million is because of the fair value uplift we've incurred on the asset. So just move on, Howard, if you would. I make no apologies for putting this. It is quite a complicated slide, but it's something we have to address and put to bed finally. We've taken over 2 years to complete the Kounrad transaction, which is a transaction to acquire the other 40% of the project that we didn't own at the time. It was a 60-40 venture project, and we now own it 100% as at the 23rd of May in the last half of the year. It's been complicated bureaucratically in Kazakhstan. Legally, some of the legal documentation has been difficult. The accounting impacts are also, you know, in some ways difficult to understand. It's fairly complicated accounting, but the principles are actually reasonably easy to understand. If you start from the first point, what did we pay for that 40% of the project we didn't own? We effectively paid 21.2 million shares to Kines Rakishev, and the value of those 21.2 million shares plus an accrued dividend was $58 million, and you can see that on the total column at the right hand side. Now that's 40% of the project, so what the accounting standards say you have to do therefore is gross that up to say, therefore, the value of the whole project is about $150 million. If 40% is $60 million, 100% is about $150 million. So that, therefore, generates what's known as a fair value uplift, both in the balance sheet of the assets you previously owned, plus bringing on board the 40% of the assets that you didn't own, but you've acquired by distributing and issuing shares to Kines Rakishev in this case. So the key numbers that it generates through the accounts are, through acquiring the 40% that we didn't own of the subsoil user contract license, $33 million. And because we had to value it effectively on the value of the shares, the bit that we owned, the difference between what we had in the books, and inflating it up to the fair value that you have to now recognise it as, goes through the income statement. And that's the $33 million gain that you'll have seen this morning in the announcement. You'll also remember 2013, we acquired KCC, the plant that Sarkin manages and that produces the cathode copper. We completed that part of the transaction due in 2013, and we recognised in the full year results to 2013 a $28 million gain. In total, for the whole transaction, a $61 million gain and an increase to the balance sheet numbers of about $100 million going through the books. So, in simple terms, if you just go to the next slide, Howard, what you'll see now is our PPE and intangible assets, effectively the assets that are the underlying bed of the business in terms of KCC and the license we own. If you add those two numbers at the top there, PPE and intangible assets, they come to about $156 million, almost 100% fair value that we've ascertained for the business. And that's reflected now in the balance sheet, if that explains it to anybody reasonably. The other bit's going to the income statement in terms of gains on what you previously owned. I guess the main point to say about the balance sheet, I won't labour it, it's a strong balance sheet. We still have no debt. We've got strong cash balances. Nick's already mentioned the fact that the cash looks a little bit low, but actually, we received $12.7 million for May and June deliveries shortly into July. So very quickly, that 29 became $42 million, and it's currently $42 million. Equity has been boosted, obviously, by issuing the shares to Kines, and you can see that on the bottom line supporting the balance sheet. And then the only other point I suppose I thought I'd mention is the liabilities have reduced quite significantly, as you can see, between the year-end period and the end of June. about $8.5 million, and we actually paid our 23 corporation tax bill during that period, and that's accounted for most of that bill. And just move on again, Howard, if you would. Final slide, cash flows, returns to shareholders. The chart on the left really shows how our cash, how the cash has been managed over the six-month period. Started the period with $44.5 million, ended it with close to $29 million, and shortly thereafter, $42 million. We spent about $3 million on CapEx, the boiler house, and we started commencement of the expansion program on site in May, so not a lot of costs were incurred necessarily in this period. And then we had the $8 million there going out for corporate income tax related to the previous year, as you can see in the $11.1 million of the tax bill we've paid in the year. We now pay our tax on a monthly basis based on the previous year, so whatever the bill was for the previous year, divide it by 12 and you pay advance payments each month, so there won't be this kind of mismatch between the cash flows in future. It will generally be a reconciling payment in December. In terms of what we've returned to shareholders, Nick's already mentioned it. You know, it's a good number to put up there that we've returned north of $40 million from $60 million raised. And I also show there what we've paid back as a share of our attributable revenue. Just to emphasise, our dividend policy is that we will pay back a minimum of 20% of what we called the attributable revenue. Now, we called it that because we owned 60% of the revenue at the time. It's basically the revenue now, in terms of what we generate from Kounrad. But we've historically paid back higher numbers than the 20%, initially borne out the fact that we were recovering money from the loans, the way we financed the project. So in 2012, we paid back just over 30%. 2013, we paid back close to 29%. And this particular dividend we've announced this morning is close to 26% of the attributable revenue in the first half of the year. And I think that's on the finances. That completes it. Over to Howard.
Yeah. The operational review is fairly straightforward for this first half. You know, we've been operating now 2.5 years and we've established an efficient operation that can run through whatever the climate throws at us. We can operate now very comfortably through winter periods where temperatures drop below minus 30. And we have a very experienced and capable operational team, 99% of whom are all local people within Kazakhstan. The table on the right-hand side just really gives a sort of flavour of the flexibility and stability that the operations achieved over this 2.5 year period, increasing copper production in line with our forecasts. You see there an average PLS flow rate that is very flexible depending upon the copper grade coming in. So far this year we've been running at an average of 778 cubic metres an hour. Actually in August we were running at 964 cubic metres an hour. Plant's completely flexible. High availabilities, all down to good operations and good engineering team, and producing excellent quality cathodes, of which we've had none of our material ever rejected. It's all high quality. Next one, Nick. The key to us producing the copper, of course, comes down to the leaching operation, and we spend a lot of time and energy monitoring what the dumps are doing in terms of their performances. On the graphics, just showing the dump layout, the dumps that we've been running for the past 2.5 years are 9 and 10, 6 and 7. And for the in-situ copper in those, we expect to recover about 50% of the copper. So far, we've extracted approximately 25,000 tonnes out of those three dumps, which equates to just over 60% of the forecast copper that we plan for those dumps. You'll see there in the column forecast, you'll see for those three dumps, we've got about 16,000 tonnes left in 9, 10, 6 and 7, the bulk of which we're anticipating recovering in 2015. But overall, the dumps are very much performing in line with our forecast. And at the end of our cycle of leaching, the forecast would be that we've still got 83,000 tonnes of copper sitting in those dumps. We're not saying we're going to get all of that copper out, but there's a strong possibility that beyond 2019-2020, we'll still be irrigating these dumps and making profitable quantities of copper from them.
Just a little bit of an update on the various projects we've got on the go. We announced that we were installing an additional two boilers in order to allow us to produce more copper through the winter period. Construction of that aspect started in May, and you can see the photographs there on the right hand side. Just to say quickly that the boiler house project is now completed, it's fully commissioned, it's ahead of schedule, it's under budget, and on Monday of this week we were running 800 cubic metres an hour through the heat exchanger and giving us an 8 degree differential just with two boilers running, so very positive. The stage one expansion, which is taking us up to the 15,000 ton annualised capacity, that was awaiting the completion of the Kennis deal. As soon as that was completed, we got stuck into it. Again, just to sort of quickly go through there, the photographs you can see at the top are the SX extension, where we're putting in a sixth mixer settler. That mixer settler will allow us to have a treatment capacity of 1,200 cubic metres an hour. All of the civil works are complete on that project now, and in fact excellent progress is being made on putting up the steelwork. We'll need extra power for this increase to 15,000 tonnes, and the lower photograph shows the 10 megawatt transformer that we've purchased being installed, and that system will be fully commissioned by Q1 2015, and we're on schedule for commissioning the SX settler area Q2 2015. The second part of that's again just showing you the steelwork going in now for the six mixer settler frame. That steel's gone in very quickly. Difference in photographs there is probably only a few days. By the end of October, this section of the building will be fully enclosed, and that will allow us to work throughout the winter period on installing various equipment that goes on inside there. Sorry, Nick, next slide. This is showing a slide of the electrowinning expansion progress. The focus has been getting the SX up and out of the way, and then we'll focus on this larger area of working. You can see there, that's the SX area there. Over 40% of the concrete has been installed already. All materials, all steel and the insulation for the building itself are on site. All civils will be finished by the end of October. We expect the building to be up fully clad by the end of November. Key piece of equipment, the overhead crane, we're expecting that on site in October. It'll be lifted up into the roof of the building, and then with that crane inside we can continue working throughout the winter installing all of the equipment. Everything on schedule for commissioning late Q2 2015. The second phase of the expansion is of course the delivery of PLS solution and exploitation from the Western dumps. All of the project documentation has been submitted to the relevant authorities in Karaganda. There's four stages that need to be approved. We've got three stages of those approved already, and the fourth stage we're hoping will be completed by the 6th of October. As soon as that's completed, all the documentation will then be submitted to Mint in Astana, and we're hoping that by Q2 2015 we'll have received the Mint approvals. In the meantime, all of the detailed design drawings are completed now by Begrim, and we're currently now in discussions with local design institutes just to get those converted to Kazakhstan norms, and we're planning on having that completed by the end of Q1 2015. As you're aware, we are looking to bring in additional water supplies from Lake Balkhash through an 18-kilometre pipeline. The design contract for that pipeline is already awarded. And with any luck, we'll have a capital cost and a design for that at the end of November, beginning of December. It then has to go through a few approvals stages, but we're hoping by the end of Q1 we'd have the approvals to commence work on the pipeline as deemed necessary, although we've still got at least 12 or 18 months leeway in terms of installing that line. Next slide, Nick. Of course, one of our biggest focuses that we spend a lot of time and effort on is health and safety, our social interactions and our social profile. Just saying there, you know, that the vast bulk of our employees are either locally from Balkhash or Coonrad. We've got a few people who perhaps come from Almaty or Karaganda and are based in Balkhash. And we only employ two expatriates out of the entire complement. Major focus on trying to buy as much as we can from within Kazakhstan. A strong focus on training and educating our workforce. We have a sponsorship scheme. We've got two good high-caliber youngsters going through sponsored MBA courses at the moment, but we do other courses as well, mechanical engineering and transport engineering, things like that. Very good community spirit locally. We sponsor lots of projects for disabled children, unhoused people. We just spent $40,000 refurbishing the local school gymnasium, with which they're very pleased. On the environmental side, on obviously continued and detailed focused environmental monitoring ongoing, and very pleased that in March, April, we had a visit by North Coast Consulting, who are an independent consultants here in the UK. They did a complete review of all of our CSR policies, health and safety policies, and we got a very positive feedback, a very positive review on that. So all in all, stable ship, everything going smoothly, projects on schedule, on budget, everything looking good for 2015.
Okay.
Thanks, Howard. Copper Bay. I mean, we haven't made much play of Copper Bay, and we've said, you know, this is a 50% interest we have in the private company Copper Bay. Just to remind everybody that the 100% project is a Chanarral Bay project in northern Chile. It is a tailings project as opposed to a waste project that we currently extract copper from in Kazakhstan. This is tailings on a beach. It is different, but we looked at this and we thought that there is a... we know the copper is there, we know it's on the beach, we know it's in the tailings product that sits on the beach. So we know copper's there. I think what we wanted to know is, could it be extracted economically and environmentally in a sound manner? So our investment comprised £2 million, approximately $3 million, into the company to acquire 50%, and that money is to and has been spent entirely in the ground. We're currently undergoing, we've just completed a drilling campaign to infill previous drilling sufficient to give us a JORC compliant resource, which we'll have in the next month or so. In addition, we've been doing a lot of test work. We've also taken samples and we're shipping them back to the UK to enable a much more extensive process test work program to be undertaken. And the process of extracting copper from this would be a combination of flotation and leach. But nonetheless, the studies are going well. We are expecting the results of the preliminary study to be available by the end of this year. And at that point, the board of CAML will take a decision as to whether or not we increase our investment into Copper Bay up to a potential 75% for an expenditure of $3 million. And, of course, that $3 million would pay for a feasibility study. So I'm hoping that by the end of this year we'll be able to announce to the market a set of numbers that come out of Copper Bay that will show that this has demonstrable value to us at the 50% ownership level and obviously commensurately at 75%. And it's going to be, hopefully, a capital number that we can live with. Now, whether or not we were to take this forward or not, that is a discussion for another day. But nonetheless, having ownership of a project with a demonstrable project with good returns is what we're looking to achieve. And hopefully the PFS numbers will give us that comfort by the end of this year. So just to finish up, and it's been a record interim statement, haven't bored people for too long, all of the numbers are very much as we've
announced to the market of nearly 5,100 tonnes of production, although this year our production guidance remains at 11,000. As you will be aware, the first 6 months don't represent necessarily 50% of our production profile, because there are more winter months in the first half of any year, the January, February, March period, and we are already now well advanced into eating away at our 11,000 tonne target for this year. We've acquired the 100% of the project that we said right at the very beginning, some 2.5 years ago, we said we would acquire that. We concluded that during the period. We finished the boiler house upgrade that Howard talked about, and still we've managed an EBITDA number just south of $22 million, maintaining our margin. Our cash cost, that shows how well the operational management team is doing, and thanks to Sarkin and her team, we kept that down lower than this period last year, down at 72 cents. But looking forward into the rest of this year and into 2015, we're going to meet our target of 11,000 tonne this year. We will have that PFS for Chanaral Bay, for Copper Bay, hopefully by the end of this year. And we're well in progressing with the SXEW expansion that Howard elaborated on. And our production target for next year, and we haven't told the market this previously, is now 13,000 tonnes for next year. So given that the expansion of the plant will be completed Q2 of next year, the second half of next year we'll start to see the commissioning of that, the ramp up, and hence the benefit from that expanded capacity through the solvent extraction and the electrowinning house. So our target, production target for next year will be 13,000 tonnes of copper. And then in 2016, the full benefit of the expansion will come into play, and we would be targeting or scheduling 15,000 tonnes. Now, at this point, I just want to say, look, we've returned 5p to shareholders, which is 25% higher than previous periods. We've shown that the project is stable now after nearly 2.5 years of production. We do have a healthy bank account, but we've already committed to spending $35 million at Kounrad in expansion program, which is currently underway, and the Western Dumps, additional infrastructure to Western Dumps, with ongoing capital requirements for the plant and the operations. We're showing a commitment to Kazakhstan and the Kounrad project totaling somewhere of the order of $50 million, I think, over the next 3 years or so. So that shows very much that Kazakhstan and Kounrad is very much our focus. It's the engine of the company. And we're showing our commitment there by committing to quite a large capital program over the coming years. So it's not all about just giving it back to shareholders. It is about investing back into the main project. But we are doing well, and therefore our business development is taking an increasing importance in the way we look at our business going forward. So we are actively looking for opportunities. They don't have to be in the waste dump or the tailings dump area. We're going to focus on copper. Our jurisdiction is Central Asia or any other jurisdiction in the world that is mining friendly and open to companies such as ours. We want to increase our EBITDA, so it's about accretion on our EBITDA. Obviously, we would then be looking at the emphasis being on near-term production or producing assets. However, as we set these goals down for ourselves, we continually see we have to shift the goalposts slightly, because something that's in production may not necessarily be a good operation just by putting more money in. It may have been configured badly, and that means it doesn't matter how much money you throw at something, it doesn't make it good. So therefore, we have to be very much fleet of foot to take advantage of some of those opportunities. But we've already assembled a team. Many of you will be aware of Gavin Farrar, who comes from the banking community, I would say, but he's a professional geologist by original training. So working with Gavin in-house, we are now looking at opportunities. And we're doing it seriously. So it's not just an ad hoc anything that comes across the desk. We're going actively out to look. And so, you know, the message we want to get out there is that we are serious in looking for those other opportunities. But equally, we're a company now that has, as I said, this is our third interim statement. I'm looking forward to presenting the finances for the full year period. Will be the second full year of operation. Very steady. We've got a great technical team on board. Good management in Kazakhstan. And I hope that everybody can see that we are committed very much to Kazakhstan. We've got a big capital program ongoing there. Looking to keep our shareholders happy with a good, solid dividend base, which will keep them... I would say we have to be one of the most progressive mining, small mining companies in terms of our dividend policy. And I hope that people will see an increasing production output from our company, both locally from Kazakhstan and in the short to medium term in other opportunities we might look to acquire. With that, I think we'll call the official bit to order and ask for any questions.
With regards to expansions, what sort of appetite do you have for debt funding of those expansions? And if you do have an appetite for some debt, what levels of gearing would you be comfortable with?
The question I should answer, I guess. The question is, what appetite for debt have we got, and what levels of gearing would we be comfortable with? I think in answer to that, Maurice, as Nick, sort of the first thing to say about it is we can finance our current expansion plans purely through the cash flows from the operation. So there's no immediate requirement to take on any debt. However, we have talked to people about debt. The obvious people maybe being your offtake suppliers. And I know certainly Gavin's had some conversations with the banks. We haven't necessarily got an appetite. I don't think that's the right phrase. We haven't got an appetite for it. I think we've managed very well without any debt in the business, and we'd like to see that continue. We've certainly got the capacity to take some debt on. What's the correct gearing ratio? I don't really know, if I'm honest with you, as I can't answer it. And we haven't, as a board, sat down, I don't think, and said 20% or 30% is a good ratio. But I think, you know, depending on the project that we may take on in the future, an expansion opportunity, we would certainly consider, you know, which is a sensible way to actually finance the expansion, bringing some debt on board, maybe to the tune of anywhere between $30 to $50 million, depending on the size of the opportunity we're looking at. But we're comfortable with the way we've managed the business from the start, with equity. We had to take equity on in the first instance. The debt markets were closed effectively back 4 years ago, I think it's fair to say. And with hindsight, that was a great move, really, because we haven't got to pander to the extra costs you sometimes get that incurred within a business because you've got debt on the books, and the providers of that debt demand that you do things to their standards which don't necessarily add value to the actual projects themselves. So we haven't got a great appetite for it, but we would certainly consider it in the future. I don't really want to add to that, Nick.
That's a good answer.
Any others, Martin?
Just a little one. The area of the northern dumps that's outside of your current area, are you making any progress with actually getting hold of those?
The northern dumps?
Yeah.
Well, they are currently under the land ownership of Kazakhmys. It'll be Kuprum. I think Kunrad is going to be taken by Vladimir Kim's new company.
Yeah.
But the northern dumps, a discussion will be had in time over those. But there's been no substantive move to address that issue.
Something that would be, in terms of a treatment schedule anyway, would be at least 10 or 15 years away.
Are there any questions from the telephone audience?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take a first question from Jerkin A. from Halyk Finance. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, everyone. Congratulations on a great half year. Well, my question will be about your cost position, which has been improving so far, and one would normally expect your cost, your cash cost to increase by an inflation rate, but historically you seem to be doing much better than that. So I was wondering if you could share with your own cash cost inflation estimate for next 3 to 5 years.
I don't know about 3 to 5 years in terms of inflation estimates, but certainly for next year, I think we'd be looking, and Sarkin can maybe help me on this one, but I think we'd be looking at around 6 to 7%. That's, I think, the official Kazakhstan inflationary rate for next year.
No, I meant you seem to be your own cash curve, company's cash curve seems to be increasing by a much slower rate than normal inflation rates. So I was wondering, maybe you have your own company cash cost growth rate, which historically has been lower than Kazakhstan's inflation rate.
No, I think we apply the Kazakh rates. I mean, what we do, I think quite successfully, as you can see from this set of results, is we manage and control those costs quite well on site. We're not immune to the normal inflationary pressures that you get on the suppliers, be it on labour, be on, you know, suppliers both inside Kazakhstan and outside Kazakhstan. So.
Yeah, I mean the other point is that big focus always on productivity and unit pounds of copper produced per person that we employ in the company. We've got fixed costs and variables, and when we produce more copper, we tend to maintain our fixed costs static, and so we do tend to get a drop in unit price.
All right, thank
you. That answer your question, then.
Well, basically, you expect your costs to be in line with inflation rate, and you don't expect this current rate to hold on for long term.
Yeah. I mean, what Howard said is about productivity. I mean, next year we've given a guidance of 13,000 tons of copper. Obviously, that is what, some 24% increase on this year's target. It doesn't necessarily follow that we would increase labour by 24%. So we will increase labour to cater for the extra requirements and demands, but not in the same ratio. So therefore, the fixed cost element, which is the wages and what have you, which make up our overall C1 cost, part of our C1 cost, they may decrease. But then energy might, we don't know where the energy price is going necessarily, but they've been pretty stable. But it's all about pluses and minuses. I would think we're going to stay within a 5% margin, I would have thought. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Charlie Bendon from GMP. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Congratulations on good results. Just wanted to ask one question about the tailings opportunity in Kazakhstan, to the extent you can give us a little bit more colour on that, both from a kind of ease of processing point of view, as well as from a access to the tailings. How easy is it to access them? Are they all locked up? Are there any older operations where there are some joint venture opportunities? Could we start to look at that as a potential area of future growth for you, as well as the existing operations?
With regards to tailings, are you referring to the Chile opportunity?
No, not Copper Bay.
Not Copper Bay. Well, I mean, in Kazakhstan, obviously the operations at Kounrad are based around waste dumps, not tailings per se. But we do look at other opportunities in Kazakhstan around tailings impoundment dams and other waste dumps. But obviously, every opportunity is dependent on location, infrastructure, and quite often, the most importantly, is the mineralogy of the material that we're looking at. And and hitherto, we haven't seen anything in Kazakhstan that really meets the requirement, or anything that's available, should I say, that meets the operating parameters that we would be looking for to enable a profitable operation to be constructed.
But that's not to say we don't keep looking. I mean, it's a big country. It's the ninth largest country in the world. It's had a lot of mining going on. And we do see every now and again opportunities come our way. Hitherto, nothing that we would necessarily put our fingers on.
And that's mainly a function of grade, or...?
I mean, the bulk of the deposits that you would be referring to within Kazakhstan are basically owned by Kazakhmys anyway. So whilst they're undergoing their sort of restructuring process, we have no indication of how Kuprum Holdings will view the specific resources that they've got in places like Zhezkazgan, Nurkazgan, and other places throughout Kazakhstan. We've had no discussions with them on that sort of thing. But so, probably 80% of potential targets would be within that Kazakhmys group, with a much smaller potential external to that.
And we have dialogue going, it would be wrong of me to infer anything more than it's just dialogue. There's nothing substantive whatsoever.
Okay, thanks.
We have no further questions at this time.
Peter.
Obviously, your focus has been copper, but are you worried even that by focusing on copper, you're perhaps ruling out opportunities that could be there, that could be very attractive financially, and have spectacular returns in other metals? That might be easier to do because they perhaps are scaled more to your ambitions than some of the copper projects that can get very big very quickly.
That's a very good question. When I said I was talking about the business development opportunities and moving the goalposts, I think we recognise that to be too prescriptive about only copper or any particular geopolitical region or any type of operation would be quite constrictive, because it doesn't take long to look at all the opportunities, all the known opportunities out there and of the size that would interest companies such as ours. So therefore you do start to look at other areas. I don't think we are as prescriptive as to say, no, we won't look at anything else apart from copper. We will look at other opportunities. But the most important parameter that we set out is it must make money, and it mustn't be too capital intensive to the extent that we overextend ourselves on the be required to overextend ourselves on the debt side. I think a lot of us do. We forgot what we were trying to do in the mining business. We're trying to make money. We're trying to make profits for shareholders. People risk their money by putting money into an operation. We raised $60 million at IPO 4 years ago to build a project in Kazakhstan. And we, at the time, Nigel and I were traipsing the streets and telling people that believe us. And they were saying, but you had just such a terrible time 2008-09. What's going to be different this time? And I think we've proven that with the money, we built a project and we've returned money. But too many of our companies forgot that it was about returning money to shareholders. And so we're very mindful we're not going to overstretch ourselves to the extent that we're going to get into a region, an area that takes too much capital or too much cash away from our core operation. So the important thing is, does it make sense and does it make money? And so from that aspect, I think we'd be prepared to look at almost anything. Morris, did you?
Yeah, with regard to the monthly tax, is that legislated that the amount you have to pay monthly? So in the case of a decline in copper prices, would you still have to pay at a higher rate and claim back at the end of the year? How does that work?
No, the way it works, Morris, is in the first 2 years that we were producing, you pay your tax at the end. So you have a 2013, for example, we paid in April 2014, like an annual tax return effectively, and paid the bill there. So we paid $8.5 million. In April of this year, and it was all 2013 tax liability. We didn't pay anything ongoing. After you've been in operation after 2 years, then you have to pay on a monthly basis. So it's almost like you pay a prepayment based on your prior year's tax bill divided by 12. It's not that it doesn't then change linked to copper price or anything else really. It's what was your historical tax liability, and pay that in advance, and then there's a reconciling payment in December. So the point I was trying to make is it's been a bit lumpy so far, whereas now we're paying something of the magnitude of $740,000 every month is going out just as a like prepayment against what's going to be a year-end tax bill of, say, $10 million. And there'll be a reconciling position at the end of December. That's the way it works, effectively.
Yeah, my question is, say coffee goes to $2.50 or $2, let's hope not, but
yeah.
Do you still have to pay it effectively as though it were...
Yeah. And if coffee goes up to $10,000 per tonne, you're paying a far lower tax bill. So it can work both ways, really. It's not mature enough to flex itself with copper prices or anything. It's just a historical tax bill.
Any more questions in the room? No? On the telephone audience, I assume no more questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. I think that concludes the presentation. And thank you all for attending. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.